Good morning. Today is Tuesday, April the 25th. Joining us this morning, Natalie attired, I might add, is Fortuna City Manager Merritt Perry. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Like getting messed with, huh?
I don't know. A little early for that.
Yeah, well, okay. Always is, isn't it? You ready for our, why do we say that?
Sure, why not? Does that sound, do I sound excited enough?
Oh, breathless, I believe. Bow and scrape. Where does the phrase bow and scrape come from? I thought you'd have fun with it. Another reason why we don't have a camera here in the studio.
Yeah, bow and scrape.
Bow and scrape.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even have a guess for that one.
Measured by any standard, most peasants of the Middle Ages were rough and uncouth. Even noblemen were often illiterate and nearly always unwashed. Many tried to make up for such deficiencies by using elaborate social rituals. Ceremonies were particularly frequent and intricate at court. There, every gesture had to be made in accordance with custom. A person presented to a king had a difficult time of it. The subject had to make a deep bow, depending on if you didn't like him, huh?
All right.
Deep bow, while twisting one foot backward in prescribed fashion. This required considerable skill, for an awkward move might throw a person forward, face down. Anyone going to court for the first time often practiced until at ease while executing the maneuver of bowing and scraping. Actions dictated by protocol made some observers think of people who were habitually... Oh, never mind. We got it done.
Yeah.
It's a big word. I don't feel like it this morning. 1650 is when the phrase came. Man.
Sounds like a good core exercise that people pay good money to a trainer to learn,
yeah, but then
to
you have
learn,
to wear,
right?
Those funny pants. But, I do have the face plant figured out very,
right,
nicely. Yes,
right.
I can do that with the best of them.
Well, next time I come in, Brian, we'll want to see your best bow and scrape.
Oh, no, you want my best face plant. Give me a break. Oh, gee. So are you guys done with the budget process, in the budget process? Where is that?
We're just getting started. So yesterday we had a budget meeting where we went over the city's general fund budget. And I should back up a little bit. Usually what we do is we take it to the council in pieces. So, typically we'll go over the general fund budget, and then our next budget workshop we'll go over our enterprise funds, water and sewer, and go over those, just so we don't have everything to go over in one meeting.
The manageable bites.
Yeah, and if we can, we'll bring the fee schedules along with that, to how are we going to adjust our fee schedules, what we charge for the various services or fees or rental fees. So, and typically that's it. We'll bring the various pieces to council, and then we'll bring it back at a regular session, and the council will have had a chance to really dive into the details, look at it, and ask all the questions they have before we go to an open session. I mean, they're all open sessions, but a regular council meeting. Yeah.
Does there tend to be an awful lot of questions about the budget or particular budget unit, or is it kind of routine and they're just looking at the dollar sign?
Yeah, I'd say enterprise funds, water and sewer, unless there's something dramatically different that's happening, they really don't receive a lot of scrutiny. I mean, it's really basic things, a big deal, how much, you have your employees and your staff, and those don't typically change. So if there's a organizational chart change where you're adding employees or getting rid of employees, they'll usually pay quite a bit of attention to that. If there's expenditures, what are those expenditures? We have smaller expenditures that aren't really projects in capital outlay. It might be a big purchase. It could be a sweeper. It could be a boom mower. It could be a vehicle, a truck, or something like that.
Those are pretty easily defined.
Yeah, those are pretty easily defined. But again, they're big ticket items, relatively so. So a lot of times they're pretty easy to scrutinize and look at the list. And then we have also a capital improvement program that gets presented to the Planning Commission and then brought back to the council. So we'll actually bring that back in one of the special budget workshops so the council can see the different projects we have. So, as far as scrutiny, a lot of the enterprise funds are not quite as highly scrutinized, you know, because they're very clearly for a specific purpose, you know.
And they've probably already been discussed.
Most of the time, yeah. And then, but general fund, it's a little, you know, those are a little more politically, they grab a little bit more attention.
That's the flexible stuff.
That's the flexible stuff, yeah. The ones you could do with whatever you want. So we have our general fund broken down into two categories. One's, you know, the regular general fund, but we also track our special tax measure separately, because a lot of folks are interested in knowing that those extra tax funds are spent on the kind of things that were discussed during the campaign. So we have a advisory committee that looks at all those expenditures using, in this case, it's Measure E. What are those Measure E funds? And the advisory committee makes a recommendation to the council. And then typically the council will take that and incorporate that into the budget. There might be a few minor tweaks as budget items become clear, but
just easier to follow.
Yeah, easier to follow. And, you know, a lot of things, there's not a big change. Again, you know, it really, the things that are different from the previous year really are what garner attention, whether something's seeing more or less. And so as staff, we try to make a presentation that highlights to the council what the differences are between the current fiscal year and the last fiscal year, or what are things that are significantly going up, or, you know, is revenue going down? You know, what are the big changes with our sources of revenue? Are things going up, or are they going down? How much? So we kind of
just noted sales tax and bed tax.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's really the big one for Humboldt County right now. You know, a lot of the state actually has seen an increase over the same quarter last year and the last couple of quarters. Humboldt County has gone down, as well as some of the other counties like Lake and Mendocino County.
Mendocino's getting drilled, huh?
Yeah. I mean, and so counties that add more dependence or more inputs from a cannabis industry are seeing reduced sales tax, you know, significant, which is significantly different from a lot of the other communities in the rest of the state.
Well, I would think the incorporateds are a little bit different than the unincorporateds also.
I think it's across the board. The county's certainly feeling that as well, too.
Right, but is Fortuna, are you feeling much?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, so we're seeing an increase right now. I think we're, you know, I don't remember the exact percentage from the last quarter, but somewhere to, you know, a 4 to 6% decrease. So, you know, people working in that industry, that translates, there's more money, you know, circulating through the community, and there certainly was a part of that in Fortuna. We have some supply stores and things. We have Tractor Supply, Horticultural Supplies. There's a number of companies that serve the cannabis industry that their sales are down.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fortuna City Manager Merritt Perry. Merritt, when you go through budget, yeah, you know, I've been told that it's more of an art than it is a science. You kind of guesstimate, you shine up the fancy ball, you get the pixie dust, you kind of look at trends, you talk to your advisors, and then you play it 10% short. Okay. I guess that feels prudent, but when something happens, how flexible it really is a budget? Everybody says it's always a something that is a guideline, but if all of a sudden sales are up 10%, or sales are off 10% off the projections, that flexibility really comes into play then.
Yeah. You know, I think it really depends on how much, You know, well, first of all, to the first question, you know, we tend to use the previous year and years as a guide for what it's going to be the following year. So, we also try to be realistic about the revenues, and then, you know, but we don't want to overstate what our revenues. And I think over the last couple of years, there was more money than was expected during the pandemic years. There was, first of all, more people were spending money and buying more things closer to home. So sales tax went up dramatically. And there was also a lot of money that was put into local governments through some of the federal packages.
Now, did a lot of that government to government money get spent with local vendors, or was it money being spent, but the benefit was here? Not necessarily.
I think most of that money was spent locally. You know, I'm not 100%.
So there's that flexibility to be able to spend local?
Yeah, you know, and under 10 million, it was pretty easy, and reporting requirements weren't that stringent. And, you know, the City of Fortuna received about 2.9, and so we had a number of projects, mostly which were provided by local vendors. We put most of our money towards a police facility, which is a little over $2 million. And looking at it was a local contractor, and their entire list, I think maybe except one, were local subcontractors. So a lot of that is going to end up going into the construction industries. And we had various small projects that we did as well. So, yes.
I'm glad you made that kind of as a separation from the $2 million for the cop shop.
Yeah.
It's like it's small. You've been inside too long.
Right. So yeah, so the last couple of years there was a significant, there was more money than was expected, but we still budgeted over the long-term trends, which was a more modest growth than, you know, the pandemic threw some agencies off where, you know, they're like, hey, great. Our sales has gone up and, you know, we're going to keep going up at a modest rate from here. But what happened is it dropped back down. So we're not really seeing a recession. If you look at it over the longer term, we're seeing it be more along a stable trend line of more modest growth, and that we were expecting that.
Kind of like you hit the lottery one time.
Exactly.
So you get a sudden influx, and then it's
right. You don't budget for the lottery win every year, right?
Hopefully.
And that's a good comparison. And so we did estimate our revenues conservatively, and so we're not having to cut dramatically. Whereas if we did, we'd have to cut more dramatically. So, but
that's
we did.
What I was saying, where does Fortis? If it's 4%, 5%, whatever the number is, what does that look like? Is it frozen positions? Is it not being able to do some of the projects that you were hoping the general fund would be able to fund this year? What does that translate to?
We typically come in slightly under what we budget, and then what we've done at the end of our fiscal year after we've done our accounting is most of the agencies in Humboldt County are PERS agencies, so we've taken that money that we've come in the black, and we put that towards the pension liability for CalPERS. And so what that does is it somewhat insulates us from the increases for the unfunded liability from CalPERS in the future. So we work really hard to stay within budget. And then when we do have a surplus at the end of the year or an amount that we come in under budget, we put that towards reducing future liabilities for the unfunded pension liability.
Chance to brag. Are you guys in a better spot than a lot of other jurisdictions as far as the unfundedness?
I don't think anybody feels like they're in a great spot. You know, we're at a maintainable level, and because we've been able to be conservative with our budgeting and put money towards that, we're not seeing big increases. Had we not done that, we'd be seeing bigger increases, and we'd have to think about what we can cut. And when you look at cutting a lot of funding from a budget in government, the biggest expense is typically jobs. That's where you can save the money. You could opt not to buy things. That's pretty easy. But the only spot you can really save money is salary savings. Yeah. So if you have vacant positions, freeze them. That's the easiest thing to do.
What I just learned, and I don't know if this is me being asleep at the switch or semantics or whatever, but if you have a position that's frozen, it's on the books. So when the monies are there, you can hire up. If you eliminate it, which is what I kind of thought, why would you have all these positions if you can't fund them? Just take them out. Well, because then it requires somebody to give you, mother may I,
right,
to get that job, position back in.
Put it back in the organizational chart, right? But yeah. Freezing them, you still need, it's the same thing. You still need permission to be there. But I think it's an acknowledgement by keeping it in the org chart that we need this position. It goes unfilled temporarily until we're at such a point where we can fund it. So But when you there's a cost to not funding those positions because other people, you know, other employees have to take on those roles.
Yeah, your workload still shifts.
Right.
It's there.
You don't get as much done if you're trying to do two jobs. You know, it looks great to have one person with four titles, but the reality is there. You can only get so much done in the day.
Well, then they need the trailer to drag around their business card, too.
Right. Yeah, I think at one point I was public works director, community development director, city manager. I think I had a couple more on there, too.
So oh, really?
I did not reprint my business card, though. Fortunately, we've got some great folks who are filling in some of those positions.
Well, apparently you weren't head duck catcher, either.
No. The stuffed duck just flew by me.
You're close to that.
No,
I didn't see that. KINS News and Information Time. It's
something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
I know.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fortuna City Manager Merritt Perry. Merritt, as you have allowed in the past, there's some cool interest. Some of the development stuff is kind of starting to get traction based on the weather this week. I guess we're in the construction season now. Are those projects progressing at the rate that you were hoping for?
I don't know. I didn't really have a set expectation for how many we have coming through, but we do have a number of building permits coming through. We have some good commercial projects, and then we're also working on...
Wait a minute, who's building commercial?
Who's building commercial?
I mean, you know, everybody says there's so much space that's available now with retail to convert into commercial.
Oh.
Yeah, are these specialized commercial or...
Specific businesses, you know, a couple building permits I'm thinking
so
about.
Expansion.
You know, a veterinary group, a restaurant... And then I also heard last week that we may have a bakery coming to the city. So there's...
Ooh, buttermilk bars?
I'm not sure yet. I well, heard donuts it, might
better,
be involved,
you
but...
You put it in there, baby.
Yeah, so right. So that's when I say commercial projects, that's what I'm talking about. We also have the specific plan that we're working on for the former Palco Mill site, now called the Fortuna Mill Commerce Center. And so if you drive by on the freeway, you'll see a big sign that says, build a suit commercial. And so they have a number of... I know they have some folks who are interested in doing projects on that site, and we have a little bit of time that we need to work on the updated land use and zoning and you know, some changes to the general plan for that site. That'll be done on their specific plan, but then they'll be ready to start looking at the development and building for new commercial projects in there.
Was it 10, 15 years ago we heard that there was no warehouse space?
Yeah.
No warehouse space, no warehouse space, no light and da-da-da. Arcata kind of jumped it a little bit with out there by where Brett Lumber, or whatever it's called now. You worked on it. What's the name of that old location?
Right.
Where O&M is.
Oh, Valley West or
Alder
Grove
Thank
Industrial Park.
Much.
I don't
okay,
know.
There we go.
You're asking me Arcata questions.
Yeah, but we're...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine. I'm asking you to go back into the recesses of... Your fertile mind. Okay.
Let me call David Loya real quick.
Yeah, we can call him without getting close to the phone. So is it that type of project or development that is being looked at or needed for that space? Because I would think that if Fortuna's looking at it, you got the airport and you got that, and you know, those
you
kind
know,
of are
we,
geared for that.
Yeah, you know, I think what we want to see is the city, being we, is the infrastructure for future development that can be flexible and reused. I think what the property owner really wants to see is a range of land uses for that site that are principally permitted. And I don't think they have a lot of things set in mind right now, but they want to be able to build based on what the market demands. And so as wide open as that is for them, the better, right? Because then they can market it for a wide range of uses.
And you broaden your base out, so if one industry niche takes a dive,
then you can repurpose it.
Yeah.
And I know in the past, you know, projects that have come up and ones that are still being discussed is, you know, there's talk of last mile, there's, you know, distribution, you know, places where you have trucks and you're bringing things in and out. Those have been tough to find.
Distribution centers.
Yeah.
This is where you bring trucks in and out.
Right. So
kind of had a rough weekend, huh?
No, not me. I'm all good.
Yeah, I'm recovered now.
Yeah. So I where you need a lot of space, there's 75 acres there of former mill site that really you could put larger facilities where if you had to locate a 10 acre facility in Eureka, where would you put that right now?
Cotton.
Where exactly?
Yeah. Way out by Ridgewood.
Right. Cut yeah. down some forest. That'll take
possibly
you
might be involved.
A little
yeah.
bit of time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, so I think there's going to be folks, you know, there's going to be those types of businesses where they want to, where you know, they need a number of acres where you're not going to be able to find it elsewhere. So,
yeah, is that in competition with the other side of the freeway? Yeah, where some of the hotels are, you've got some open space there.
There's really not
where Tanfrani was going to be his place at one point.
Yeah, there's just not as much space over on the west side, and really we're eyeballing that for more of the tourist serving. But I think, you know, and still we're just at the beginning, and we're about, you know, we'll bring a draft to the public soon. And we are taking some input from the developer, but I think it'll be really interesting to see what the public wants to see. But what I'm hearing from some members of the council and some members of the public is they just want to see that land put to good use. They want to see the creation of jobs and
something.
You know, whether it's warehouses and commercial space where you could have a mechanic shop or you could have fabrication or you could have people coming in who want to manufacture something. There's or distribution facilities. There's folks want to see that land be productive. They want to see those jobs be created. There are some areas where there will be some potential to have more customer-facing portions of it and other areas where, you know, it, maybe not so much, but along some of the entrances to the site.
I would think mostly if there was a concern, it'd be around noise.
Noise, light.
Well, and different times of the day, obviously different standards.
Right.
And smell. Okay, you know, don't locate a pulp mill right there, even though pulp mills are not a bad thing anymore. But, you know, or something, a skunk cologne factory.
Right. We won't do that.
I know there's a high demand for that.
Yeah,
product,
right.
But we'll just
go. I was gonna ask, Brian, what are you wearing?
Yeah, and the lights at night. Yeah. Time. So, you know, you kind of have
in
that.
In case you get lost, we can find
right,
you.
Yeah, we don't need to bring in the coasties. Just send out the dogs. They'll find
right.
You. Yeah. But, you know, within reason, it's refreshing to hear that's the feedback you're getting is jobs, jobs, jobs. Because there's so many projects we've had historically that jobs seem to be very, very low on the pecking order.
Yeah. And let's face it, you know, retail, there's a slump in retail. More people are going to online buying. And so, you know, we don't see a lot of demand for that retail space. But there's certainly a lot of room there that could be created as well if there was a demand.
And I love the thought of the restaurant expansion also.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:47. We're back this morning with Merritt Perry, City Manager in Fortuna. So Merritt, as you look into next fiscal year, you know, you've got the construction season happening, you got a bunch of cool things that are kind of out there percolating that I would think optimism at least is probably the tempered word right now for the next little bit. What are your canaries? What are you going to be looking at to make sure that things are on the right trails? Sales tax obviously is going to be in there, bed tax is going to be in there too, but how do you measure community spirit, which I think is probably the big motivator behind a lot of this stuff?
That's a great question, Brian. I'm really glad that you're interested in community spirit and how we measure that. I mean, that's a big jump from our budget to community spirit,
well,
right?
You know,
okay, I hadn't thought about how we measure it, but I guess the thing that I would look at is participation in special events. And we have a number of them that go throughout what we call the event season, which is really July through October, starting kind of with some of the rodeo events all the way through apple harvest in the fall. And the attendance numbers for those events really jump out to me. I know they had great attendance last year. And I think when you see people getting out and about and attending those events, I think that's a pretty good measure of community spirit and just seeing people participate and show up.
Do people stop by and say, good job? Or if they see you on the street or in the restaurant, you know, lunch or something, do they say,
yeah, we
really like what you guys are doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, we hear that a lot, which is, you know, a great thing to hear. Because you also get complaints from time to time.
The sharp end of the sword,
right.
Too.
But no, yeah. we get a lot of compliments, and I always appreciate it when people take the time to email and say, hey, I really like the fact that you guys did this, or thank you for your help, or thank you for considering that. Well, yeah, we get that a lot, actually. And I mean, not enough, but it's really nice when somebody recognizes that you put the extra effort out to either help them or resolve the problem that they have, and so we put a lot of attention on that. And
maybe even just the priorities of what projects are done. I mean, the ball fields or the, you know, the rodeo grounds or throwing a sidewalk down that hadn't been there before.
Yeah.
Those types of things that are kind of small-ish.
Yeah.
But as far as a day-to-day, it really can impact somebody.
Yeah, and you know, people a lot of times are surprised when they do submit something and we do take care of it. They're like, wow, I think we exceed expectations pretty easily. So I think a lot of times that people don't expect the city to be responsive, but we really do try to do that.
Tells you where the bar,
right?
No, not the drinking bar.
Right.
The bar of expectations typically is.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
To be able to exceed it.
Yeah.
It's kind of frustrating that it's so simple to do though.
Right.
Because that tells you either.
Just follow through, make it a priority.
Yeah.
And you can't do everything, but it's exciting. We have some basketball courts that we're working on, and they're going to be really nice acrylic surface basketball courts with some nice color and new.
Acrylic?
They put like a surface, like a tennis court surface.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not just pavement.
Right.
You
know? We both played on those courts.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
You know, but then you eliminate one excuse.
Yeah, so it'll be exciting. Those are under construction. They should be done.
You're doing pickleball courts?
No. They play inside the pavilion. Now we're gonna have here it begins. now we're gonna have a push for the dual stripe outdoor courts, and
I would never
our poor kids who want to play basketball.
Yeah.
You knew what you were doing, Brian. I'm on to you.
Yeah, you know, as far as I go with pickles, sandwich.
No, yeah, that's right. That's it.
Yeah.
Hey, it looks like fun. I'm not knocking pickleball, but we did want to.
Well, it's. I know it's taking off, and I suspect that's part of the challenge for any jurisdiction that doesn't have unlimited funds. Is okay, something cool is coming up, and a lot of people start skate parks.
Yeah.
Bike parks. You know, those were the things. You know, a couple years ago, now it's pickleball courts. You know, if you don't have the money, by the time you do have the money, now you know, it's kind of waned a little bit, or you're seen as being non-responsive.
Yeah. One of the things we did when we had more funding coming in is we put some of our Measure E dollars in reserve. And so right now, last year we saved, you know, we put aside $450 for the expansion of Newburgh Park, which we were able to add eight acres in the Measure E committee and the council looked at today, adding another $450 for Newburgh Park. So we have $900,000 right now that'll be in this year's budget to expand Newburgh Park. And we want to put in new regulation soccer fields. You know, Eel River Youth Soccer League's huge, a lot of kids.
It's still stunning?
Yeah.
How many kids soccer?
Yeah,
it should be an economic development. I mean, you should be able to, at some point, host some of these tournaments during the, well, I guess summertime, there's not too many hotel rooms, but during the off seasons.
Absolutely, and that's one of our hopes, is if we can get some of these regulation fields in, we can make them available for use a little closer to the Bay Area for traveling teams to come up here.
All weather, or are they still grass?
We're going to do turf fields. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, but they'll have nice drainage systems installed with them. So some of our other fields don't have the best drainage, and having planned drainage, having them raised up and crowned,
well,
they certainly will be easier to maintain in wet conditions.
And you are an expert in drainage, so you should at least be able to.
You're going to hold me accountable on that one.
Well, you know, if there's a the whole. Let's see, we don't have
Brian,
a herd.
I will get you.
We don't have a herd of ducks. What do we have? A covey of ducks?
I will get you the best practices manual for field drainage design from Oregon State University, I think, is the one I looked
at
there.
You know who's the AD up there now?
No.
Scott Barnes, the guy from that was at Humboldt.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess he's having a medical challenge. That's the only reason why I know. Thanks for coming by, bud.
My pleasure.
See everybody tomorrow.